quickly glanced over to where Noriko was, in the bushes. Following his gaze, Shuya looked over at Noriko too. Noriko's face and lips froze at Tatsumichi's glance. The cat had already gone off elsewhere. Suddenly, Tatsumichi turned to Shuya and swung his hatchet sideways. Shuya met the blow with the knife he'd pulled out from his belt. Unfortunately, it was still inside its leather sheath. But in any case, there was a locking sound. He managed to stop the blow about 5 centimeters from his cheek. Shuya could see the blue ripple on the hatchet blade, probably formed when it had been forged. Before Tatsumichi could swing back, Shuya tossed his knife out and grabbed Tatsumichi's hatchet arm, the right. Tatsumichi forced a swing. It was slow, but managed to hit the right side of Shuya's head. Some of the slightly wavy long hair above his right ear fell, and a sharp tear ran through his earlobe. It didn't hurt much. A silly, inappropriate thought crossed his mind. Well, it's no big deal. Shinji had his pierced, after all. Tatsumichi switched the hatchet from his right hand to his left. But before he could swing at Shuya again, Shuya swept his left leg under Tatsumichi's feet. Tatsumichi's legs buckled. All right now, fall. But he managed to stay up, teetered, and then spun around, flinging himself at Shuya. Shuya backpedaled into the shrubbery. The sound of crushed branches surrounded them. Shuya continued moving back. Forced by Tatsumichi's awesome strength, he was now practically running backwards. Noriko's face was vanishing from his sight. In this unreal situation, another absurd thought crossed his mind. He recalled Little League practice. Shuya Nanahara, backwards running champion, yeah! Then his feet felt funny. He suddenly recalled how there was a steep slope toward the field with the shrine. I'm falling. The two of them tumbled down the shrubbery-covered slope. The clear early morning sky and greenery spun around and around, but he still managed to hold on to Tatsumichi's wrist. He felt as if they'd fallen from a great height, but it was probably only 10 meters or so. Their bodies crashed with a loud thump, and they were still. The area was bathed in sunlight. They'd fallen into the field. Shuya was crushed under Tatsumichi. He squirmed to get up before Tatsumichi could, but that was when Shuya felt something strange. Although Tatsumichi had come at him with the force of an air compressor, the strength in his arms had completely gone. They'd gone limp. Shuya looked up from under the lower part of Tatsumichi's chest and saw why. Right above him, the hatchet was lodged into Tatsumichi's face. Half of the blade stuck out from his face like the top layer of chocolate on a Christmas cake. The hatchet had landed on his forehead and neatly split open the left eyeball. A gooey liquid leaked out with his blood, and a pale blue light reflected off the blade inside his mouth. Tatsumichi still gripped the hatchet, but Shuya was the one holding his wrists. Shuya felt a horrible sensation running at the speed of light from Tatsumichi's face to his wrists. As if tracing the course of this sensation, blood slid down the blade, flowing from Tatsumichi onto Shuya's hands. Shuya let out a low groan, let go of Tatsumichi's wrists, and got out from underneath the corpse. Tatsumichi's body rolled over onto its back, a horrific, dead face thrust into the morning light. Huffing and puffing, Shuya felt a numb urge to vomit. The incomparable horror of Tatsumichi's face wasn't a trivial matter, but for Shuya there was a greater horror. Yes, he had killed someone. Worse yet, a fellow classmate. It was no use convincing himself it was an accident. After all, he had done everything he could to deflect the blade and therefore direct it toward Tatsumichi by twisting Tatsumichi's wrists as far back as possible. He felt incredibly nauseated, but Shuya gulped and held back the urge to vomit. He lifted his head and looked up at the slope he'd just tumbled down. He couldn't see beyond the shrubbery covering the slope. He'd left Noriko alone. The important thing now is to protect Noriko, Shuya thought. He had no time to puke. I have to hurry back to Noriko, Shuya told himself, as if these thoughts would calm him down. He stood up and stared down at Tatsumichi's face and the hatchet for a moment. He hesitated, but then pursed his lips together and pried Tatsumichi's fingers loose from the handle of the hatchet. He couldn't just leave Tatsumichi like this. Of course, he couldn't bury him, but Tatsumichi's hatchet face was just too much. He couldn't bear it. He grabbed the handle and tried to pull the hatchet out of Tatsumichi's head. The hatchet was lodged so deeply into Tatsumichi's face, it looked as though he'd been born with the hatchet in his skull. Shuya took a deep breath. Oh, God. Then he thought about it. No. What's this about God? Miss Anna was a devoted Christian, but no thanks to her faith in God, she ended up getting raped by Sakamuchi. Ah, praise the Lord. Shuya felt another surge of anger. He clenched his teeth and knelt beside Tatsumichi's head and put his trembling left hand on his classmate's forehead. With his right hand, he pulled on the hatchet, which made a horrible spurting sound as the blade finally came loose and blood sprayed out of Tatsumichi's face. He felt as if he were in a nightmare. Cracked in the middle, Tatsumichi's head was now asymmetrical. It looked too unreal, like a plastic fake. Shuya realized for the first time in his life how malleable and fragile the human body was. He gave up trying to close Tatsumichi's eyes. His left eyeball and eyelid was split, the eyelid swollen so badly it couldn't be shut. His right eye was probably manageable, but who'd want a winking corpse? It was in bad taste given the circumstances. He felt sick again, but he stood up again and turned around. To get back to Noriko, he'd have to take the long way around up the foot trail. Shuya's eyes opened wide again, though, because there was a boy wearing glasses and a school coat in the middle of the field. The male class representative, Kyoichi Motobuchi. And this representative was holding a pistol. 30 students remaining. Chapter 17. Behind his silver-framed glasses, the class representative's eyes met Shuya's. His hair, which was usually so neatly parted at a 7-to-3 ratio, was now a complete mess. The lenses of his glasses looked smudged, and the eyes behind them were bloodshot and wide open the way Tatsumichi's eyes had been. Kyoichi's face was incredibly pale, as it had been inside the classroom, once again resembling a Warhol print. He didn't look human anymore. As the gun flinched, Shuya twisted his body and ducked backwards. With an explosive pop, the gun set off a small flame. Something hot grazed the top of his head. Of course, he might have just imagined it. Anyway, the bullet missed him. Still on his back, Shuya didn't have time to think. He just tried to retreat. The tall grass made a rustling sound under his back. He was too close. He couldn't escape. Kyoichi Motobuchi was only several meters away from Shuya, aiming directly at his chest. Shuya's face grew as stiff as a plaster sculpture, more than protecting Noriko. More than anything, it was real fear that caught him now, welling up inside. The next tiny lead bullet that gun spits out will kill me. Kill me. Stop. Another voice yelled. Kyoichi suddenly turned in a diagonal direction. Shuya also followed Kyoichi's glance. A large figure stood in the shade of the shrine. Buzzed hair. No, the head was practically bald, with prominent scars above his brows, and the tough face of a thug. It was Shogo Kawada, male student number 5. He held a pump-action shotgun, a sawed-off Remington M31. Without any warning, Kyoichi shot at Shogo. Shuya saw Shogo quickly duck. As he heard the explosion from the shotgun that Shogo still held in his kneeling position, sparks flew from the muzzle like a flamethrower, and the next moment Kyoichi's right arm was gone. Bloody mist filled the air. Kyoichi gazed blankly at the half-sleeve of his school uniform. The rest of his sleeve, from his elbow to the hand that was holding the gun, was now lying on the grass. Shogo quickly pumped the shotgun and loaded the next shot. A red plastic shell flew out to the side after spitting out its pellets. Kyoichi screamed like an animal as he suddenly realized what had happened. Shuya thought he would fall to his knees, but he didn't. The representative instead ran for his arm. He pried the gun loose from his right hand with his left hand, like a one-man baton relay. Great. Shuya once again felt like he was watching a bad horror flick. Or better yet, reading a bad horror novel. Damn, this was bad. Stop, Shogo shouted. But Kyoichi refused and pointed his gun at Shogo. Shogo shot again. Kyoichi's body bent over into a triangle shape, with his waist pointing out like a long jumper, but blown backwards. He landed feet first, and as if in time-lapse photography, the next moment he was falling on the ground, face up. He sank into the overgrown grass and remained still. Shuya scrambled to his feet. He could see Kyoichi's body between the blades of grass. There was a gaping hole in the stomach of the school coat, and the contents inside looked like a trash bin in a sausage factory. Shogo hardly paid any attention to the corpse and quickly approached Shuya with a shotgun. He pumped the shotgun again and ejected the empty shell. Shuya was overwhelmed by the quick succession of events and the horrific deaths of Tatsumichi and Kyoichi, but he managed to say between heavy breaths, "Hold on, I'm..." Shogo stopped behind Kyoichi's body and said, "Don't move. Drop your weapon." Shuya finally realized he was still holding the hatchet. He did as he was told. The blood-drenched hatchet fell to the ground with a thud. That was when Noriko appeared, standing where the trail nosedived. Dragging her leg, she had made her way through the thicket, following the path made by Tatsumichi and Shuya when they tumbled down the slope. Shuya then realized that less than a minute had elapsed since his confrontation with Tatsumichi Oki. She'd turned pale from the gunfire, but now she was holding her breath at the sight of the sprawled-out corpses of Tatsumichi and Kyoichi, and the face-off between Shogo and Shuya. Shogo immediately noticed Noriko and pointed a shotgun at her. Noriko's body stiffened. "Stop it," Shuya shouted. "Noriko is with me. We don't want to fight at all." Shogo turned slowly to Shuya. He had a strange, blank look. Shuya shouted at Noriko. "Noriko, Shogo saved me. Shogo isn't an enemy." Shogo looked at Noriko and then returned his gaze to Shuya. Then he lowered the muzzle. After remaining frozen for a while, Noriko raised her hands to indicate they were empty, then nearly slid down the steep trail. She staggered, dragging her right leg, and as she drew herself up next to Shuya, they both looked at Shogo. Shogo stared back at them as if they were twin armadillos. Shuya noticed that the stubble on his cheek and chin had grown a little. "First, let me explain," Shogo finally said. "I had no choice but to shoot Kyoichi. You understand?" Looking over at Kyoichi's body, Shuya considered Shogo's words and realized that maybe the representative had totally lost control. He might have seen me beat Tatsumichi Oki and gotten the wrong impression. Noriko wasn't around, so it would have been natural. As Shogo said, Shuya had no right to fault Shogo for his actions. If Shogo didn't kill Kyoichi, then Kyoichi would have killed Shuya. After all, he had also killed someone, Tatsumichi Oki. He looked back at Shogo. "Yeah, I know. Thanks. You saved me." Shogo shrugged. "I was just trying to stop Kyoichi, but I guess I ended up doing that as well." Adrenaline was still rushing through his body, but Shuya managed to blurt out, "I'm so glad. I'm so relieved we've met someone else who's normal." In fact, Shuya was surprised. Back in the classroom, he thought if anyone was going to play the game, it'd be Shogo. But not only was he not playing along, he managed to save Shuya's life. Shogo stared at them for a while, as if he were thinking through something. Then he said, "So you two are together?" Shuya raised his brow. "That's what I said." Then Shogo asked, "Why are you two together?" Shuya and Noriko looked at each other. Then they looked at Shogo. Shuya was in the middle of saying, "What do you mean?" But then stopped as Noriko asked the same question. But she stopped in mid-sentence too, realizing Shuya was asking the same thing. Shuya and Noriko looked at each other again. Shuya thought Noriko was giving him the green light to speak first, but then as soon as he began speaking, his words overlapped with hers. That's because, once again, Shuya and Noriko exchanged glances. They ended up facing Shogo without saying a word. A quick grin ran across Shogo's face. If he was smiling, It was the first time Shuya had ever seen him smile. Shogo said, "All right, all right. In any case, we have to hide out. We don't want to be standing out here in the open." 29 students remaining. Chapter 18. Yuko Sakaki, female student number 9, was wading through the thicket. It was dangerous for her to run so recklessly, but she had to escape. That was her priority. She played back the scene she had just witnessed in her head. The incident she saw from the bushes. Tatsumichi Oki's head split wide open. Shuya Nanahara yanking out the hatchet from his head. She was horrified. Shuya Nanahara had killed Tatsumichi Oki. He did it flawlessly. Until Shuya pulled out the hatchet from Tatsumichi's head, Yuko was so transfixed she couldn't take her eyes off the scene. But as soon as she saw the red on the hatchet, fear took over. She grabbed her day pack and held her mouth shut because it would have shrieked on its own. Tears welled up in her eyes. The sound of gunfire followed behind her, but she could hardly hear it given the state she was in. 29 students remaining. Chapter 19. After Shuya and Noriko returned to the thicket where they'd settled last night and picked up their bags, Shogo remarked that their view was no good here. Shuya thought he'd been thorough choosing this location, but Shogo seemed abnormally adept in this environment, so they did as he said and moved toward the mountain. The dirty cat was gone. "Hold on. I'm going to find Kyoichi's and Tatsumichi's bags." Shogo left them in the nearby shrubs. Noriko sat down to rest, and Shuya sat next to her. He was holding the revolver, Smith & Wesson 38 Chief's Special, Shogo had given him after retrieving it from Kyoichi's body. It made him feel uncomfortable, and he didn't want to carry it. He'd seen that grotesque one-man baton handoff, but he managed to hold it. "Shuya, here." She held out a pink adhesive bandage. She must have found it in the day pack Tatsumichi Oki's hatchet had torn through. Shuya touched his right ear with his left hand. The bleeding seemed to have stopped, but he felt a stinging pain. "Hold still." Noriko drew near him and opened the bandage's seal. As she carefully wrapped it around his earlobe, she said, "I wonder why so many of us came here. 5 students, if we include Shogo and us." Shuya looked back at Noriko. The thought hadn't occurred to him thanks to all the action, but she was right. He shook his head. "I don't know. We came here to get as far away as possible, right? We avoided climbing the hill and avoided the shore where there is too much visibility. Maybe we were all thinking the same thing and ended up at the same place, thinking we'd be safe here, including the representative and Tatsumichi." The moment he mentioned Tatsumichi, he felt a nauseous pain in his stomach again. His face split down the middle, left and right out of alignment like a peanut. And this corpse was lying right nearby. "Ladies and gentlemen, the magnificent Peanut Man." Along with the nausea, Shuya's thoughts, which had been numbed by the adrenaline rush of fighting, finally grew clearer. He was coming back to his senses. "Shuya, you're pale. Are you okay?" Noriko asked, but Shuya couldn't respond. A shiver ran through his body and he began to tremble. His teeth chattered uncontrollably as if dancing a crazy tap dance. "What's wrong?" Noriko put her hand on his shoulder. Shuya answered, his teeth still chattering. "I'm scared." Shuya twisted his neck to the left and looked at Noriko. She glanced back at him with a look of concern. "I'm scared. I'm scared shitless. I just killed someone." Noriko looked into Shuya's eyes for a long moment. Then she cautiously moved her injured right leg and sat diagonally in front of Shuya with her knees bent. Then she gently opened her arms and wrapped them around Shuya's shoulders. Her cheek touched his trembling cheeks. He felt her warmth, and his nostrils, which had been overwhelmed with the smell of blood, detected a slight whiff of something like cologne or shampoo. Shuya was surprised, but he was grateful for the comforting warmth and smell and sat still, hugging his knees. It reminded him of the time his mother hugged him as a child before she died. As he looked at the collar of Noriko's sailor suit, he had a fleeting image of his mother. She spoke clearly, always so full of energy. Even as a child, he thought she was a stylish mother. Her face, oh man, looked a lot like Kazumi Shintani's. She was always exchanging smiles with his father who, with his mustache, didn't seem like your typical salary man. Wrapped in her arms, he would hear her say, "Your father works in law and helps people in trouble. It's a very important job in this country. Someday I'm going to marry someone like my mom, and then I'll be smiling all the time the way mom and dad do." Their smiles made him feel that way. The trembling gradually subsided and disappeared. "Are you all right?" Noriko asked. "I think so. Thanks." Noriko slowly let him go. After a while, Shuya said, "You smell nice." Noriko smiled bashfully. "Oh God, I didn't take a bath yesterday." "No, really, you do smell nice." A smile flashed across Noriko's face again when the bushes rustled. Shuya shielded her with his left arm and held the Smith & Wesson. "Don't shoot, it's me." Parting the thick bushes, Shogo entered. Shuya lowered the gun. Shogo carried 2 day packs and the shotgun over his shoulder on a sling. He took out a small cardboard box and tossed it over to Shuya. He caught it in midair and opened it, exposing the golden bottoms of bullets arranged in neat rows. 5 bullets were missing, leaving cavities. "Bullets for your gun. Load it," Shogo said, then put his shotgun by his side and pulled at some worn-out fishing wire. He pulled at one end tightly, and Shuya saw how the wire went straight into the deep end of the bushes. Shogo then took out a small knife from his pocket and snapped the blade out of its handle. Shogo's supplied weapon was a shotgun, so, Shuya figured, the knife he must have brought on his own. Shogo walked to a tree trunk no thicker than a can of Coke and made a notch in the bark with his knife. Then he fit the taut wire snugly into the notch and cut off the excess. He tied the remaining wire around the tree trunk in the same manner. "What are you doing?" Shuya asked. "This?" Shogo put away his knife and answered. "You might call it a primitive alarm system. We're at the center. The wire runs around us in a circle with a 20-meter radius. The wire's doubled. The moment it catches someone, the wire will be pulled and fall from the tree. Don't worry. The intruder won't even notice. It'll provide us with a warning." "Where did you find that wire?" Shogo tilted his head slightly. "There was a little general supply store. I wanted to get my hands on some things, so that was my first destination. That's where I found it." Shuya looked astonished. Of course. No matter how small this island was, there had to be at least one supply store. But the thought never even crossed his mind. Of course, it wouldn't have been possible for him to wander around, given how he had to look after Noriko. Shogo sat down where he could face both Shuya and Noriko. He began sorting through a day pack that had belonged either to Tatsumichi or Kyoichi. Taking out a bottle of water and some bread rolls, he said, "How about some breakfast?" Still hugging his knees, Shuya shook his head. He had no appetite whatsoever. "What's wrong? You feel sick from killing Tatsumichi?" Shogo examined Shuya's face and said casually, "Don't let it get to you. Let's say each person kills one person. The game's like a tournament. It's 40 students. So if you kill 5 or 6, then you'll be the winner. 4 or 5 more, that's all you'll need." Shuya knew he was joking, but no, it was all the more offensive because he was joking. He glared at Shogo. Sensing Shuya's anger, Shogo drew back. "Sorry, man. I was just kidding." Shuya asked in a hostile tone, "So you don't feel nauseous? Or did you already kill someone before Kyoichi?" Shogo merely shrugged. "Well, this time, it was my first," he said. It was a strange way to put it, Shuya thought, but he had no idea what was so odd about it. He felt confused. If Shogo was the rumored delinquent he was said to be, then he might be bold in a way Shuya could never be. Shuya shook his head and changed the subject. You know, there's something I don't get. Shogo raised his brow. The ugly scar above his left brow moved with it. What's that? The representative. Kyoichi. Hey. Shogo pointed his chin up at him to cut him off. I thought you understood. I didn't have any choice. Are you saying I should have let him kill me? I'm not Jesus Christ, okay? I can't be resurrected, although I've never tried it out. No, that's not what I meant. Shuya wondered whether Shogo was kidding again. Was Shogo Kawada the joking type? I think the reason Kyoichi tried to shoot me was that he saw me kill Tatsumichi up close. I killed Tatsumichi, and that was because he attacked me. Shogo gave a slight nod. So it was only natural that Kyoichi would try to kill me. That's true, maybe. But even so, No, Shuya interrupted Shogo. Forget about that. What I mean is that Tatsumichi came after me even though I didn't do a thing. And besides, I was with Noriko. Why did he have to attack us? Shogo shrugged and put his water bottle and bread by his feet. Tatsumichi was up for it. That's all. What's to understand? No, well, theoretically, yes, but I just don't get it. How Tatsumichi could... Shogo cut off Shuya's hesitant words. There's no need to understand. Huh? Shogo's lips twisted slightly as if grinning. I'm only a transfer student, so I don't know much about you and your classmates. But what do you know about Tatsumichi? Maybe there's someone really ill in his family, so he felt he had to survive. Or maybe he was just being selfish. Or maybe he went insane from fear and lost his capacity for reason. Or there's even this possibility. You were with her. He might have thought you teamed up with her. How can you tell whether he's invited? You and she might have decided he's a threat. Or if you were actually playing the game, then you could use this same excuse to kill him, Shogo said. Hey, did you provoke him at all? No. Shuya stopped, recalling how he'd reflexively touched his knife when he faced Tatsumichi. Shuya himself had also been afraid. He'd been afraid of Tatsumichi. Was there something? I touched my knife. He looked at Shogo. But that's not enough to... Shogo shook his head. Oh yeah, it is, Shuya. Tatsumichi might have thought, I have to beat you since you're holding a weapon. Everyone's fuse in this game is pretty short. He said as if to conclude the topic. But in the end, Tatsumichi was up for it. That's the best way to understand it. Look, there's no need to understand. What it comes down to is this. Once your opponent attacks you with a weapon, you don't hesitate. Otherwise you'll die. You can't afford to think about it. The first thing you do is anticipate your opponent. You shouldn't trust people too much in this game. Shuya took a deep breath. Did Tatsumichi really want to kill me? Then again, as Shogo said, it might be pointless to think too much about it. Shuya looked up at Shogo again. That's right, he said. What? That's what I forgot to ask. So what is it? Come on. Why are you here with us? Shogo raised his eyebrows. He licked his lips. Good point. I might be against you too. That's not what I mean, Shuya shook his head. You saved me. No, you also risked your life trying to stop Kyoichi. I'm not suspecting you. Well, you got it wrong, Shuya. You don't seem to understand this game yet. What do you mean? Shogo said, being in a group gives you an advantage in this game. Shuya considered this, then nodded. He was right. You could take turns being on the lookout, and you are stronger in case of an attack. So? Think about it. Shogo nudged the shotgun resting on his knees with his hand. Do you think I was risking much to stop Kyoichi? Do you think ordering him to stop would have actually stopped him? Maybe I was already planning on killing Kyoichi. Did I really have to kill him? Kyoichi never struck me as the type who'd attract a group. But maybe I ordered him to stop just to put on an act for you guys to join me. Wouldn't it be in my best interest to join you guys and then kill you off later? Shuya stared at Shogo's face, surprised by this series of clear and logical explanations. It was true Shogo was a year older than they, but he talked like an adult. A wise, mature adult. In this sense, he resembled Shinji Mamura. Shuya shook his head. There'll be no end to it if I start getting suspicious. You're not against us. He glanced over at Noriko. That's what I think. Me too, Noriko nodded. If we can't trust anyone, we'll lose. That's a noble thought, girl, Shogo nodded. If that's the way you want it. I'm just telling you that you got to be careful in this game. Then he asked, So what is it? Shuya suddenly remembered he was the one with the questions. You. Why do you trust us? Teaming up with you doesn't necessarily rule out that one or both of us is against you. You said so yourself. You have no reason to trust us. I see, Shogo responded, as if amused. An applied question. You're getting the hang of it, Shuya. Come on, I want an answer. Shuya waved the hand holding the revolver. Shogo drew back as if to warn him it was dangerous. Well? Shuya insisted. Shogo raised his brow again. Then he revealed that faint smile on his face. He looked up at the branches looming above them and then back at Shuya and Noriko. He looked serious. First of all, Shuya saw something intense run across Shogo's calm eyes. He didn't know what it meant, but it was intense. I have my reasons. I have a problem with the rules. No, the game itself. Shogo stopped for a moment. You're absolutely right, but, you see, I'm embarrassed to admit this, but I've always based my decisions on my conscience, so... Shogo grabbed the barrel of his shotgun, standing between his knees as if it were a cane, and looked at them. A bird was chirping deep in the woods. Shogo looked solemn. Shuya listened nervously. You two make a nice couple. That's what I thought when I saw you this morning, and I still think so now. Shuya stared at him, his mouth agape. Couple? Noriko spoke first. Her cheeks were bright red. You have it all wrong. We're not. I'm not. Shogo looked at Shuya and Noriko and grinned. Then he broke out laughing. It was an unexpected, friendly laugh. He continued chuckling. That's why I trust you. Besides, you just said so yourselves. There's no end once you start getting suspicious. Isn't that enough? Shuya finally grinned. Then he said sincerely, Thanks. I'm so glad you trust us. Shogo continued smiling. Oh no, the honor's mine. I knew you were an individualist the day you transferred to our school. Easy with the fancy terminology. Sorry, but I was born with this mug. I can't help it if I don't look friendly. Noriko gave him a warm smile and said, I'm so glad. Now we have one more on our side. Responding to Noriko, Shogo rubbed his finger against the stubble under his nose and made an unexpected gesture. He turned to Shuya and offered his right hand. I'm glad too, now that I'm not alone. Shuya squeezed Shogo's thick hand. In keeping with his appearance, it felt like the hand of a fully mature man. Shogo stretched past Shuya and offered his hand to Noriko. You too. Noriko squeezed his hand. Then he looked down at Noriko's leg wrapped in bandanas and remarked, I'd forgotten about this. Show me your leg wound first, then we'll talk about our plans. 29 students remaining. Chapter 20. The sunlight reflecting off the detailed patterns of the opaque window began to turn white. It poured through the top of the window into the building where Yumiko Kusaka, female student number 7, was sitting against a wall. She squinted her eyes. Yumiko remembered the trite phrase repeated in the sermons given by the local priest of the Halo Church, which her parents and she, before her name was even registered, attended. The sun will rise every day, blessing every one of us with joy. Oh yeah, I am so blessed to be part of such a wonderful game, ha ha ha. Yumiko lightly shook her short, boyish hair. She flashed a sarcastic smile over to Yukiko Kitano, female student number 6, who was sitting near her, also against the wall. Yukiko remained in a daze, staring at the wooden floor bathed in light. Even though the building they were in carried the lofty name Okushima Island Tourist Association, it resembled a plain town council hall. Down by the lower entrance, there was an office desk, a chair, and a rusty file cabinet. The desk had a phone. She tried using it, but of course, as Sakamochi had warned, there was no dial tone. Inside the file cabinet, they found only some unattractive tourist flyers. Yumiko and Yukiko had been friends ever since nursery school. At nursery school, they were in separate classes and lived in different neighborhoods. But they met, thanks, once again, to the Halo Church their parents attended. When they met, it was Yumiko's third visit to the church. But for Yukiko, it seemed like it was her first. She looked intimidated by everything there, including the gong ringing with every chant and the general atmosphere of the heavily decorated church. So Yumiko approached the quiet girl left alone by her parents, who were preoccupied with some task, and said, "Don't you think this is all so stupid?" The girl looked a little shocked, but then she smiled. They'd been friends ever since. Though similarly named, the two girls were very different from one another. Yumiko was energetic and got labeled a tomboy. Even now, although the chances of that now returning were very, very low, she batted fourth on the softball team. Yukiko was domestic and baked cakes for Yumiko. Yumiko was now 15 centimeters taller than Yukiko. Yukiko often said she envied Yumiko's height and her well-defined face, but Yumiko was in fact more envious of Yukiko for her petite body and round cheeks. It was true. They were totally different, but they were still best friends. That didn't change. Fortunately, well, that was putting it harshly, the death of Yoshitoki Kunonobu, male student number 7, before his scheduled departure enabled their own departures to be only 2 minutes apart from each other. After Yumiko left the classroom, she hid behind a pole and waited for Yukiko, whose face had turned white. They left together. 20 minutes later, Yoshio Akamatsu returned to begin killing, but they were unaware of this, and headed north far beyond the residential area, following the road on the eastern shore. A little ways up the northern mountain, they found a single building standing alone on a hill. They locked themselves inside. Over 4 hours had passed since then. They were exhausted from the extreme tension and remained sitting next to each other as time flew by. Yumiko looked away from Yukiko and along with her stared at the floor. Even though she was in a daze, she continued to think. What in the world were they supposed to do now? Sakamochi's announcement was audible even inside this building. Aside from Yoshitoki Kunenobu and Fumio Fujiyoshi, 9 classmates were already dead. Aside from Sakura Ogawa and Kazuhiko Yamamoto, the others couldn't have been suicides. People were out there committing murder. Right now, someone might have been dying. In fact, she thought she'd heard gunfire right after the 6 a.m. announcement. How could you kill your classmates? Of course those were the rules, but Yumiko couldn't believe there could be people who'd actually follow them. But if someone tried to kill her, if she could assume that much, then she would probably fight back. Yes. If so, then Yumiko looked at the megaphone lying in the corner of the room. Could she use that? If she could. Wasn't there something she could do? She was simply afraid of doing it, though. Not just of doing it, because while she couldn't believe anyone was playing the game, she also couldn't rid herself of this overwhelming fear. That was what made her seek shelter here with Yukiko. What if... But she recalled something from when she was in elementary school, the face of her best friend. It wasn't Yukiko. The friend was crying. For some reason, all she could remember of her friend's appearance were tears and her pink sneakers. Yumi, Yukiko said, interrupting Yumiko's thoughts. She turned to face Yukiko. Let's eat our bread rolls. We won't come up with any good ideas if we don't eat. Yukiko provided a kind smile. It felt slightly forced, but it was still her usual smile. Okay, Yukiko repeated, and Yumiko returned her smile and nodded. All right. They took their bread rolls and water from their day packs. Yumiko looked at the two cans inside. The cans were a greenish silver, and at the top a cigar-sized stick stuck out, attached to a lever and a metal ring approximately 3 centimeters in diameter. She assumed they were hand grenades. Yukiko's weapon was a set of darts. It must have been some kind of joke. It even came with a wooden target board. After she finished half of her roll and took a sip of her water, Yumiko said, You feel a little better now, Yukiko? As Yukiko chewed on her bread, her round eyes grew wider. You've been shaking all this time. Oh, Yukiko broke into a smile. I think I'm fine now. I mean, with you by my side. Yumiko smiled and nodded. She wondered whether she should bring up what they should do while they ate, but decided against it. She just wasn't feeling confident enough about her idea. It could be extremely dangerous. To go through with it wouldn't only endanger herself, but Yukiko as well. But on the other hand, it was this kind of danger that was forcing everyone to panic over the deadline. What was the right thing to do? Yumiko just wasn't sure yet. They remained quiet for a while. Then Yukiko all of a sudden said, Hey, Yumiko. Hmm? What? You might think this sounds stupid, but... Yukiko lightly bit on her small but full lips. What is it? Yukiko hesitated, but then finally let it out. Did you have a crush on anyone in our class? Yumiko's eyes suddenly grew wide. Wow. This was exactly the kind of topic you discussed at night when you were on a study trip. After going through the rituals of playing cards, pillow fighting, and checking out the inn, late at night you could bitch about your teachers or talk about the future, but none of those were in the same league as this topic. It was the holy topic. And of course, she'd expected to have this kind of conversation during their study trip, until they'd fallen asleep on the bus. You mean, a guy? Yes. Yukiko's downcast eyes bashfully looked over at Yumiko. Yumiko hesitated a little, but then replied honestly. Yes, I did. I see. Yukiko looked down at the knees of her pleated skirt and said, I'm sorry I never told you, but I like... Shuya. Yumiko nodded without saying a word. She already had a hunch. In her mind, Yumiko pulled out her file on Shuya Nanahara. He was 171 centimeters tall, weighed 58 kilograms. His eyesight was 1.2 in the right eye, 1.5 in the left. And although he was thin, he was muscular. In elementary school, he was a little league shortstop and batted first, but he quit and now preferred playing music. He was an excellent singer and guitarist. Because of his status as the team's best player during his little league days, combined with the fact that the first kanji character of his last name meant seven, he had the baseball nickname of Wild Seven, just like the cigarette brand. His blood type was B, and he was born, just as the first character of his first name indicated, in the fall. He lost his parents when he was young, and now he lived in a Catholic orphanage called the Charity House. He was best friends with Yoshitoki Kuninobu. Oh God, and now he was dead, who also lived in the Charity House. Shuya's strongest subjects were in the humanities, literature, and English, so he was a decent student. He had a unique face. His lips were slightly curved, but his double eyelids were sharply defined and kind-looking, so he wasn't bad looking at all. His hair was slightly wavy and long, covering his neck and touching his shoulders. Yumiko's file on Shuya Nanohara was filled to bursting. She was pretty confident hers was more thorough than Yukiko's. One of the most important subjects in the file was his height because, she thought, if Shuya didn't grow any taller, then she wouldn't be able to wear high heels with him since that would make her taller than he if they walked together. But now that she was sure about Yukiko, she wouldn't be able to share these thoughts with her. Huh. Yumiko tried to look as calm as possible. Really? Yes. Yukiko looked down. Then she made the point she wanted to make all along. I really want to see him. I wonder what he's doing. As she sat with her hands on her thighs, she burst into tears. Yumiko gently touched Yukiko on the shoulder. Don't worry. Knowing Shuya, no matter what happens. Realizing, though, that this might have sounded funny, she immediately added, nervously, you know how athletic he is. Plus, he seems really gutsy. I mean, I don't really know, but... Yukiko wiped away her tears and nodded. Uh-huh. Then, as if she felt better, she asked, so who do you like, Yumiko? Yumiko could only look up at the ceiling and say, as she thought it through. She was in trouble. Maybe I'll just randomly pick someone to avoid the issue. Tatsumichi Oki was a star player on the handball team. Even though his face was kind of coarse, he seemed like a nice guy. Everyone called Shinji Mamura a genius basketball player, and he knew so much. He even had a following of girls who were into him. They weren't from their class, maybe because his general reputation among the Class B girls was that he was a playboy. Mitsuru Numai acted like he was a badass, but he didn't really seem so bad. He was kind to girls. Oh God, but he's dead too now. Hiroki Sugimura seemed to have a brooding quality that was kind of cool. Some girls were afraid of him because he practiced martial arts, but to Yumiko that was attractive. But he was close to Takako Chigusa. Takako would get on my back if she ever found out. She can be so harsh. But she's a good girl. Come to think of it, everyone was, both boys and girls. I'm back to the same question. Should I not trust them? So who is it? Yukiko asked again. Yumiko faced Yukiko again. She hesitated again, but then she decided to let it out. At the very least, she should bring it up. After all, Yumiko was the ideal companion she could share her thoughts with. Can I ask you something? Yukiko tilted her head, puzzled. Yumiko folded her arms to concentrate. Then she asked, do you really think there are people who want to kill others in our class? Yukiko knit her brows slightly. Well, I mean the fact is that they died. As she pronounced the word died, her voice trembled. Died. All of them. It was announced this morning. 9 students have already been killed since our departure. They couldn't have all been suicides. Besides, didn't we just hear gunfire a little while ago? Yumiko tilted her head as she looked at Yukiko. She spread out her hands. She noticed for the first time that her left cuff was slightly torn. Now look, you see how terrified we are here, the two of us, right? Uh-huh. And I think the others are in the same state. Everyone must be terrified, don't you think so? Yukiko seemed to mull over her point. Then she said, yes, maybe. I've been so preoccupied with my own fear, that thought didn't even occur to me. Yumiko nodded once. And because we were lucky enough to end up together, it's probably nowhere near as bad as being alone, which I'm sure would be absolutely terrifying. Yeah, you're right. And what would happen if you encountered someone in that state of fear, Yukiko? I'd run away. What if you couldn't? Yukiko seemed to consider the situation carefully. Then she spoke slowly. I just might fight. If I had something, I might throw it. Or if I had something like a gun, I just might shoot. Of course, I try to talk, but if it happened quickly and I didn't have any choice... Yumiko nodded. Exactly. That's why I think no one here really wants to kill anyone. I think it's because we're so terrified we become deluded that everyone else is out to kill us, and so we resort to fighting. And in that state, even if no one attacked, we might even end up attacking others on our own. She interrupted herself, unfolded her arms, and put her hands on the floor. I think everyone's just terrified. Yukiko pursed her small, full lips together. After a while, she looked down at the floor and said in a halting voice, I don't know. I just can't trust some of them, like Mitsuko Sauma's gang and Kazuo Kiriyama's. Yumiko forced a smile and moved her sitting position by shifting her legs under her pleated skirt. I'll tell you what I think, Yukiko. Hmm? We're going to die the way things are going. Time limit? If no one dies in the next 24 hours, even if we survive that long, we'll still end up getting killed. Yukiko nodded. She looked scared again. That's true. So the only thing we can do is have everyone cooperate to find some way out of here, right? Well, yes, but I have to tell you something. Yumiko interrupted Yukiko and then tilted her head slightly. I once had a horrible experience because I didn't trust someone. I was in elementary school. Yukiko stared at Yumiko. What happened? Yumiko glanced up at the ceiling. She recalled the face of her friend crying, and the pink sneakers. Yukiko looked back at Yumiko. Do you remember the egg cats? They were such a big fad. Everybody loved them. Yeah, they were character figures. I had a plastic board with them on it. And I had an egg cat's tri-tip ballpoint pen, the limited edition. I mean, it seems like such a silly thing now, but at the time I absolutely adored it. Uh-huh. Well, it disappeared. Yumiko looked down. I suspected my friend of stealing it. She wanted it so badly. On top of that, I realized it was gone after first period gym class, and she'd excused herself from gym because she wasn't feeling well and returned to our classroom. And, this is really awful, she didn't have a father and her mother worked at a bar, so she didn't have a good reputation. Yukiko nodded slowly. Right? I bombarded her with questions, but she said she didn't know. And I even told the teacher about it. Our teacher, come to think of it, the teacher must have been biased, too. The teacher told her to tell the truth, but she just cried and said she knew nothing about it. Yumiko looked back at Yukiko. When I came home, I found the pen on my desk. Yukiko remained silent and listened. I apologized to her. She said it was all right, but it just turned out all awkward and she ended up... I think her mother ended up remarrying, transferring schools, and that was it. We were such good friends, as close as you and me. But in the end, I wasn't able to trust her. Yumiko shrugged and then continued. So ever since that incident, I've been doing my best to trust people. I want to trust people. If I can't, then everything falls apart. This is different from what the folks at that stupid Halo Church preach. This is my belief. I hope you understand. I do. So let's consider this situation now. Well, yeah, Mitsuko Sauma does seem dangerous. That's her reputation. But I doubt she's so bad she'd actually get off on killing people. She can't be that bad. No one in our class could be that bad, don't you think? Several moments later, Yukiko nodded and replied, Yes. So, Yumiko went on, if we could just contact everyone appropriately, then the fighting would stop. Then we could figure out together how to deal with the circumstances. No, even if we couldn't do anything... At the very least, we could avoid killing each other. Don't you think?
Yes.
Yukiko sounded hesitant, but she nodded. A little worn out from talking, Yumiko took a deep breath and shifted her legs again. In any case, that's my opinion. Now let me hear yours. If you're against it, then I won't do it. Yukiko looked down at the floor in contemplation. After 2 full minutes, she mumbled, "Remember how you once told me that I'm always too worried about other people's opinions?"
"Hmm?" Yumiko said. "Did I say that?"
Yumiko examined Yukiko's face. Yukiko looked up and their eyes met. Yukiko smiled gently. "I think you're absolutely right. That's my opinion." Yumiko smiled back at her and said, "Thanks." She felt grateful to Yukiko for seriously considering the idea on her own before sharing her thoughts. And now it seemed that her response confirmed the validity of her idea. "We have to do this. I don't want to die without putting up a fight. If there's a chance, then let's go for it. Just as I said to Yukiko, I want to trust people. Let's try it." Then Yukiko asked, "But how are we going to do this? How can we contact everyone?" Yumiko pointed at the megaphone lying in the corner of the room. "We have to figure out how to use that." Yukiko gave several small nods and looked up at the ceiling. Then she said, "If all goes well, I'll be able to see Shuya." Yumiko nodded. "Yes, I'm sure we will," she said, full of hope this time. 29 students remaining. Chapter 21. All right. Shogo tossed the needle and thread onto the day pack beside him and said to Shuya, "I need the whiskey again." Noriko's bent right leg rested on its side. The wound on her calf was sewn up with coarse cotton thread. Shogo had managed to stitch it up. Of course, they had no anesthetic, but Noriko managed not to cry during the 10-minute operation. Shuya offered the flask to Shogo. Next to them was a small rock pit. The empty can rested on top of the charcoal, and the water inside was boiling. Shogo had explained how he'd found the charcoal along with the needle and thread at the supply store. He disinfected the needle and thread with the boiling water, but applying it directly to her wound was out of the question. Shogo had already soaked her wound with whiskey before he began stitching. He was going to disinfect again. Noriko, who'd managed to relax a little, now grimaced again. Shuya looked at his watch. Because of the time it took to boil the water, it was already past 8 a.m. "Okay," Shogo said as he pressed the disinfected bandana on her wound. Then he quickly wrapped another bandana around Noriko's leg. "We're done." He added with a note of concern, "I hope the wound hasn't been infected." Noriko tucked in her leg and showed her gratitude to Shogo. "Thank you. That was impressive."
"Well, I'm good at playing doctor," Shogo said as he took out a Wild 7 cigarette from his pocket, put it between his lips, and lit it with a disposable lighter. "Did he get those from the store, or did he bring them along for the trip?" Like Buster and High Night, Wild 7 was a popular brand. Shuya gazed at the package, illustrated with silhouettes of motorcycle riders. He had no idea what they symbolized. The cigarettes piqued his curiosity because Shuya's baseball nickname was the same as this cigarette brand. The name came naturally. Shuya was the star player of his little league team. He was a great clutch hitter with men in scoring position, and once he was on base, and no one else could get any hits, he could create his own scoring opportunities by stealing a base. Shuya even held the impressive record of stealing home 3 times in 1 season. When the bases were loaded and their pitcher was in a pinch, he'd make the play to get them out of the jam, and if the pitcher was too tired, he'd switch from shortstop to pitcher. Wild Card Nana, 7. Yes, sir. In his second year of junior high, he became classmates with the star shooting guard of the basketball team, Shinji Mamura. Shinji's nickname was the Third Man, which he got during his first year when he sat on the bench as the second backup guard.
But with 5 minutes left and their team trailing by 20 in the district finals, this third man came onto the court and single-handedly brought his team to victory. Ever since then, Shinji was a fixture in the starting lineup, and